Hey, Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu with you today as we broadcast right around the Edinji broadcast service right around the world, actually, thanks to the internet and everywhere else. Thank you for joining us today. We've got a it seems the weekend has the long weekend that is up, if you're living up this way, has taken its toll. And I know that Yirrlim and Bumi are out and about at the moment doing some important work. But we've got Ganyara here to talk about, I guess, the post-election nightmare for some and some of the other things that we can talk about today. But Ganyara, one of the highlights was that the divisive approach, or what seemed to be a divisive approach or a unifying approach, if you talk to the Liberal Party, I guess, being under one flag and all that, race politics didn't work. But ultimately, it's still there needs to be settlement somewhere, and it may happen in the future with treaties and voices and all that kind of stuff. But it may not appear as that in the Australian realm in the future.
Oh, it'd be pretty safe to say that may not might not be the right word. It's got to happen, or Australia is in deep water. You know, they're in deep trouble. So it's got to happen, as in sovereign-to-sovereign treaty, you know, not inside Australia. You know, this the old voice to Parliament, and we said it right in the very start, going back when this first came about, the voice to Parliament inside Australia is wrong. We said, you can't vote for that because it's racist. It's based on the heritage of people, you know, of the humans that are seen through an Australian identity. So that had to fail, and that was fair enough, it failed. But the voice to Australia, which is through our ambassador or our Minister for Foreign Affairs, will be to their Minister for Foreign Affairs, Penny Wong. Now, I found it rather strange that, 4 or 5 days before a major election is to be held, Senator Wong comes out and said, look, you know, the voice is inevitable. But she didn't say what sort of voice, the old voice or the new voice, the Yidinji voice.
Well, let's have a listen to what she said. I think this is on SBS, one of the great channels in Australia, I guess you could say. SBS and ITV. But let's take a listen to Penny Wong here.
Is it your view that eventually a voice to Parliament in Australia is inevitable? And is it important that truth and treaty do occur for our relationships in the Pacific?
Well, I'm sure the Batuta advocate would be very pleased with the amount of publicity they're getting. The voice is gone. The Prime Minister has made that clear, and the Australian people have made their position clear, and we respect the result of the referendum. What I would say is that doesn't mean reconciliation and closing the gap stops, and you know, we need to keep together progressing those.
And what about treaty and truth-telling? I mean, because you have said, and your government has said, that there is an important relationship with Pacific Indigenous people, and that was part of the conversation.
And we continue to engage through our First Nations ambassador with the peoples of the Pacific, because they you know, obviously Australia's First Nations people share a special bond with the people of the Pacific, and you saw that when Prime Minister Marape spoke to the Parliament.
The Welcome to Country debate that has unfolded this week, do you fear, and you have a lot of knowledge around these discussions within Cabinet, that this kind of debate emboldens the neo-Nazi movement?
Well, we should all stand against those who wish to tear our country apart, and those who are part of that hard right movement do. They wish to set Australians against Australians, and we should all stand against them.
Does this debate fuel that?
Look, in relation to Welcome to Country, I think for me, it's an act of respect. It's an act of in recognition of what has gone before. And for me, it brings us together. I think there are many Australians who feel the same way.
So that was Penny Wong there talking to SBS television there. You're right, Ganyara, she did mention that there may be some sort of voice or representation, and they'll do that through their Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, it seems, which is the correct department if you look at treaties and all that kind of stuff inside of Australia. That's the correct department. Whether they have the who can they treaty with, for example, that's a different story.
Well, I just find it strange that the Indigenous ambassador is within her department, you know. So it comes in there, which is rather strange for the voice within Australia, because this is where the voice from outside of Australia is to be heard, you know. And it's our voice, our Yidinji voice, our sovereignty that has to be heard inside Australia, because we'll go back to the old maxim, you know, whatever person or thing that's on your country is subject to your law. Now, they talk about coexisting sovereignty, the sovereignty of the Aboriginal nations. And I'll use Aboriginal as a Western descriptive word. You know, we're I like to more refer to it as the continuing pre-colonial nations that were here. And they're continuing to this very day. That's what Yidinji is. It's pre-colonial. They were here first, always been here, always will be here. And it's true and correct, you know. So it's that sovereignty that allows law to be made. Whose law? Our law. But as a second set of lawmakers have come into our territory and just settled here, which is, by the way, not an act of conquest. They didn't come and conquer us and destroy us, otherwise they would have destroyed our law. So they just come and sat here for a while on our nice big spread chair. They come and sat on our big sofa, and then they took over the sofa, and then they took over the lounge room and the kitchen, but they realised they still haven't conquered our law. So there's got to be some way to share power here. The power to govern Australians, and our power to govern our society, our group, our people, how we see fit. And that's the very issue of coexisting sovereignty. Now, Uluru mentioned that. The Uluru statement came out and said coexisting sovereignties. And they said that the Aboriginal nations were here first. Their law is still here. They're the owners under this law. So now they've got to have this, mechanism, the voice, how they can hear what we think, what we say, what we're doing on our country. And it would apply to all Australians if we wanted to apply it properly and fully. But, you know, we don't want to do that. We need to let Australia govern its people. But we need to be able to work with Australia, or they need to be able to work with us on our territory. So this is what an external voice is all about, and it's got to go through the correct channel, which is the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.
Yeah, and look, Australia has a multitude of brilliant legal minds. Professor Megan Davis is one of those, as would there's many others, constitutional lawyers and all these things. George Williams, Harry Hobbs, Indigenous rights lawyer. There's many these academics now talking about this other Cairns entity or whatever it is that they want to describe it as. And that's an important thing, because to talk about these things means there's something does exist. So you can't talk about it and not have a reference point. So there has to be something here. We know that the Yidinji Nation is before you and me, before anyone, really, and that was God's creation. We know that. And I think that's really important to understand. Now, the business of life is conducted through personalities, instruments, government ID, digital IDs, currencies, it's all coming. And the Yidinji Nation has been very, very much prepared in that sense and ready to engage. I would hope and pray that many other nations are considering it. Obviously, we talked to a few of them. But this is something that's really, really exciting. And whether Australia is ready for it now or in the next few years, it's not really for us to wait around for. I think there are international actors who want to engage now. It could be the US or Israel. It could be China. It could be Russia. It could be anyone. But Australia needs to get its house in order. And this may be what we're seeing at the moment.
I got a feeling it is. We were told in 2017, they said, look, Yidinji are probably 30 to 40 years ahead of everyone else in the sovereignty issue. You know, the movement that's here about addressing the coexisting sovereignties. If we're not going to wait 30 years. We're not going to wait 40 years. We're actually said, look, very nice, Nigel, good to hear, but no thank you. We're going to keep advancing at our pace, not at Australia's pace. We're not going to kick it down the road while they prepare Australians to come about and to see this other thing that's here, which is what Penny Wong done, that went before the election. That's 4 or 5 days before the election. It was this shock and awe system. Come out and said, oh, the voice is inevitable. Shocked all the Australians. They all jumped up, and then she said, oh, no, I didn't really mean it that way. But the shock was already done, you know. The hit had already happened. And now it's conditioned their mind to see, okay, well, something is happening. Then you get others talking about the inevitability of a treaty. Treaties are coming. They really are. They need them. We don't need the treaties. Australia need them. We can do a treaty with whoever we like. This is the crazy part. You know, what would happen if we said to Donald Trump, you know, president of the US, he's talking about doing deals with Greenland or taking over Greenland militarily, or Canada or Panama. He's talking about these moves all over the world. What would happen if we said, president of the USA, come down to us. How about we do a deal? How about we do a 75-year deal or a 100-year deal or a 200-year deal. You can come into our part of the world and administer our territory for and on behalf of us under our direction, and you get the benefit of doing whatever you got to do, extract minerals, cut trees, go fishing, military bases, you can do whatever you want. Or we said the same to China. Think about that. Xi Jinping, you know, come into our world, you've got a 200-year deal to go fishing, cut our trees, do what you've got to do, put a military base. Australia needs the treaty, not us. We're the ones that will be part of the treaty. We offer this to Australia. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it August 2017 we actually travelled to Canberra? We actually travelled down there into the big building, the big place with the big flag on top. We went around to the ambassador's entrance, come in through the to the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, come and said, look, here's a deal for you. We want to build a way forward to where we can offer Australia a treaty. Hang on a sec. Megan Davis now, what's that, 8 years later, is talking about treaty is inevitable. It's got to come. 8 years after we did, we're not waiting 30 or 40 years. We've got to keep advancing our country, our people, for the betterment of our people, but also for those other persons that are here on our territory, those identities that are here, the humans that are here. We've got to look after them as well. We're not going to do it the British way. We're not going to do it the colonial way, but we want all people included.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point about the elders putting together this whole thing. Like I said, it is there because they had that vision to look after the future generations of the Yidinji people. Most people are living very, very harshly at the moment and in poverty. And I'm not saying all Yidinji families like that, but, you know, a majority of people are wanting truth. They want to be the reinstated of the law and all these things. But they want it done in a way that's proper Yidinji way. Like you said, not the British way, not this way, not that way. But it has to be done through some sort of official mechanism, and that's why this government exists.
Look, I shouldn't pick on Jacinda Price, but she did come out and say the Aboriginal people should be thankful that they've got running water, that they've got food laid on, they've got hospital. That was running up to this election. You know, really she was just the puppet being manipulated by the far right to give the colonial narrative, you know. And it's sad in a way that she knew what she was saying. You know, she's not stupid. She's a smart woman. But she was hedging her bets on I'll go with the power brokers that are going to get in. You know, they're assuring me that this will happen and I'll get to some power and authority. It doesn't work that way. You've got to do this morally. It's the moral correctness of this, you know. So Aboriginal people shouldn't be thankful that they got running water. Aboriginal people should be thankful that a deal wasn't done 200 years ago or 150 years ago or 100 years ago where they would have been done for beads and trinkets. You know, they would have been cleaned out for that and Australia would be here properly, you know, under its own sovereignty. There'd be no sovereignty for the Aboriginal people now to negotiate the best deal for all people. All people that are on our country, including the Aboriginal people, they need the ones. They don't need any more native troopers doing the wrong thing. Native troopers here to shoot Aboriginal people shooting Aboriginal people. We don't need that. We need this as adults now. And sadly, most people see it all about the money. It's all about the almighty dollar. And that's the corrupt part. That's the wrong part. We got to do this properly. And this is why we're saying right from day one, the sovereignty issue has to be addressed, not for money. We're not asking for one Australian dollar. And by the way, we don't get Australian dollars. We don't work in Australian dollars. We work in Yidinji dollars because we got to develop our economy, the one that was here first. That's continuing and it's going to develop and it's revitalising itself. And this is how we operate. We're going to offer to Australia, as we've done over the years, a mechanism to connect to our dollar and we'll continue the underwriting of Australia or whatever other sovereign nation wants to come in and take part in the treaty with us. So Australia's got to get its act together. If it wants to be the preferred one, it's got to get its act together very quick. And I think this election sort of showed that to me, that the divide and conquer, you know, we're all one now. The Jacinta idea is long dead. Don't go down that road again, you know, make Australia great again. That's finished.
Yeah, I think the only way to make Australia great is through settlement and treaty. So this is from the Yidinji point of view I'm speaking about here, because that's the thing that's sticking out like a sore thumb at the moment, that there is no treaty. The out of all the Commonwealth countries, Australia is the only one that doesn't have a treaty with the Indigenous populations. So, you know, this needs to be remedied. Otherwise, it could very well mean the end of Australia as people would understand or think it. Now, if you talk to the people like Andrew Bolt, if you're listening to him, he's saying it's all over. We've allowed the, all these, what is it, diversity types and cultural people coming in and immigrants and all that kind of stuff, and now the Australia that we know is going and it's never coming back. So what we're saying is, well, Yidinji's always been here. It's not going anywhere, and it's going to be here forevermore. There's absolutely no whether Australia comes or goes, that's not from here. It can be part of the Yidinji story, but it has to be through treaty.
Well, both sides of politics have acknowledged that the problem is here. They know it's in Australia. Tony Abbott, you know, the divided nation, until this is sorted out in his speech to Parliament, in his speech to Parliament, he said, you know, until we become like New Zealand, where two become one. So it's still two. It hasn't been unified yet through treaty. Paul Keating, you know, Prime Minister Keating, he said the same thing, basically. There's unfinished business here. The unfinished business is treaty. How did Australia get here? And they must be very careful because, for example, and I'll use Yidinji for example, say Yidinji do a deal with China. Now, the rest of Australia can be Australian, but all of a sudden there's one little piece now as a foothold of China. And, you know, the Belt and Roads Initiative starts to develop. And here it is. It's coming in. And you'll see it expand out. Or if the US come in, they want to come in and develop our resources. That's what they're all after, you know. The Ukrainian deal recently, where they're after rare earth minerals. Hang on a sec. Yidinji's got a mountain of gold sitting down there. Maybe the Americans need gold for their Fort Knox, you know. Come in and give us a hand. We'll dig her out and we'll mine it. It's under World Heritage, but that doesn't affect us. World Heritage has got nothing to do with Yidinji. That affects Australia, not us. And I think, you know, President Trump is pulling out of the Paris Agreement. Okay, it's all over and done with this climate issue, so we'll pull out of that. He wouldn't hesitate. I'm sure of it. He wouldn't hesitate to walk straight out of the top of the World Heritage and say, we're digging this gold out here because we need it for now Fort Knox. You know, we need this gold. I wouldn't be surprised if he'd done that, if he ever got in. So, you know, this is what I'm trying to say to people. The Australia needs us. We're trying to do the right by Australia for not $1, not one Australian dollar. We're not a land council. We're not a PBC, a prescribed body corporate under the Australian system. We're not native title stuff. We're here under our original law that's continuing. And look, Yidinji, you know, even if the nation reduces down to the tableland lot, the top up there where they come from at the top, say the rest of them can't get it together, we still control part of our territory. And, you know, people don't understand this. It's not all these little clans. It started up the top, the sovereignty side of thing, but it's expanded into the whole nation. But the people of the nation should be coming in to continue it. But there's a lot of native troopers coming about, you know, trying to shoot us down. And it has sometimes has win, sometimes has fail. But the most part is that Australia recognise we're right. And we know we're right. We know that they know we're right. And this is... So we're advancing this for Australia's interest better than the native troopers ever will.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the reality is that the land councils and the PBCs, they're already there and they're doing a job, and I don't have anything against that, to be fair. But what I will say is that they are not the be-all and end-all on tribal affairs, and that comes down to tribal council through the sovereign Yidinji government. So the PBCs and the land councils will not be the ones to... facilitate treaties or negotiations, in my view. It has to be done through our government. And that's where that respect has to be given. And to a certain extent, you know, I've spoken to people that work at these places and I think they're okay with it. I don't see any animosity towards the SYG in that regard, and vice versa. Some people... choose to be, their ego chooses to be in that world to be the boss and to do that stuff. But there's actually people there that with a good heart and will, and they want to advance and collect evidence, whatever it may be, for the tribes in lieu of something like the sovereign Yidinji government coming to fruition and you know, advancing on these different levels. So I think there's a potential to work together in the future, but like you said, the treaty is a really, really big part of that.
Can a land council do a treaty on behalf of Yidinji? You know, can Northern Land Council do a treaty on our behalf? No, unless they're empowered by the people who are the true and correct donors in their true and correct capacity. As John Howard said, Australia can't treaty with itself. He's right. Australians, including Indigenous Australians, Yidinji Australians, cannot talk about our country. They can't do a deal on our behalf. It's got to come from the genuine, you're inside your world over there. Sovereignty Australia, we're in our world of sovereignty. And we've got our legal actors negotiating with your legal actors to talk about this. So Land Council, it's Australian. It really is. Now, native title is a really interesting concept because it's only there to provide evidence. A native title determination said, yep, that group of people are there for a reason. They were there first and they're still there. And we can actually, as Australians, see their society, their systems of law. And that's exactly what it's saying in all the Yidinji ones. We can see their systems of law, which means the Yidinji nation in its original capacity, not as Australians, have sovereignty over their land. And not just a little portion where, you know, like one area of mangrove swamp where there's 6 million, you know, sand flies. No, they've got the whole lot. All their land titles exist because they haven't treated away one of them. So that means they own all of what we claim.
Yeah, that's when you look at the map, that's quite a nice piece of territory. But like I said, the airports, the whole lot, it is Yidinji national property. I don't have a problem with saying that because I'd be lying to you if I didn't believe in it. If I didn't believe that, because what am I doing here? So the belief is there, and it's just creating that mechanism. It's not about money, and we keep saying that because it is about fulfilling the law. And Yidinji are the guardians of this land, there are other guardians within that area. And they're the different clan groups and other mobs that are reside there. So I think it's really important that that message gets through. And I just don't think that these things can be done at a stroke of a pen inside of Australia. You're correct. It can't be done that way. It has to be done through this office for this particular exercise we're talking about at the moment. And, you know, until other nations get on board, they're going to have to be a bit more proactive on that level and get their house in order and things like that. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumabit Premedia 98.7. We'll be back after the break.
Through the depths and returns to my nature, blessed and highly favored with my.
Asmi Wood is no stranger to Black Law Tribal Edition, and with the issue of treaty still being talked about, we decided to replay an interview that we did a while back about the Australian National University, a College of Law, did a series of workshops on treaty, and the Yidinji Nation and the Birrigubba Nation was honoured to be part of that exercise. And this was the interview straight after that, and I hope you enjoy it, Professor Asmi Wood. Asmi, welcome to the program. It's not your first time, I know that, and we love having you on. Talk about these workshops. There's a lot of talk about treaties. People often mention that, in whether it's the Uluru Statement or they're talking about sovereignty. But maybe people take them through what an actual treaty is, because a lot of people may not know what they want from a treaty, for example, which is why I guess this exercise took place in the first place. But talk a bit about that.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very grateful to you for your participation and you know, bringing other communities here to Ngambri Ngunnawal land where the ANU is situated to look at things which are absolutely vital to Aboriginal people moving forward. I think Uncle Michael Mansell said in 2003 how small communities, whatever that means, are much more true to the notions of their own people, whether you agree with them or not, than what he, I think, obliquely says are assimilated Aboriginals to some extent. So treaty is a legal agreement between two nations, nation to nation. If you remember Mr. John Howard, when he said we were all Australians, said you can't make a treaty between yourselves. But that's if you consider everybody Australian. Many Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people do not accept that characterization of their people. But as we found in our exercise, when you have two communities that assert their nationhood, that fits into the Montevideo Convention, which talks about permanent populations, knowing your borders, having a system of governance, having methods of dealing with people, you know, whether people call it citizenship or belonging, these terms don't matter, but you really live, breathe and behave as if you were a nation, and you assert it. So in international law, assertion is important. Of course, it's not always easy with when you're dealing with a very strong party on the other side, but nonetheless, you've done this for a long time, and I know you've done this for a very, very long time. So the idea of a treaty is that you have a people like Yidinji, and we have another group, Birigaba, who probably haven't done this for as long as you have, if I'm not mistaken, but you've brought them along a long way. You've helped them. You know, there's a huge mutual respect between the two communities. You behave in the way we understand our ancestors to have behaved, with love, courtesy, kindness, mutual respect, all of these things which we want our people to project and to enjoy as well. So you have two sovereign nations entering into agreements between each other. Of course, there are some technical issues that go with it, which we covered on the first day, looking at, you know, how nations normally behave in this kind of situation. And, you know, you behave like two nations really entering into treaty with each other. There was no, there was nothing to say that you were not bona fide nations entering into faith, entering into treaty in good faith, considering the law, not ignoring law. And, you know, there was a meeting of minds on many things. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to go through all the provisions that we could have used. But the provisions that we did cover were done in an amazing way. I might remind you that the treaty negotiations went on to very late that night, you know, where you had a bit of dinner and continued to pour through the text and the concepts, as most nation states do. So you behaved in that way, which was really exciting to see.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. And what I loved about the exercise was that there were lawyers there, there were students, which was really great because they participated and got immersed into what we were doing. And I think that's really important to, when we're talking about spheres of law and different types of law, I mean, obviously when you look, I'm walking down the road here at the college, and there's family law, there's criminal law, there's corporations law. You know, where I see the ANU and some other institutions leading that space is Indigenous specific law, and not just as a side dish, let's say. And to be fair, I it was done in a culturally safe space, and that's a very important thing. And congratulations to the ANU for providing that space. So these spheres of law that we talk about is something that the students can consider and look at and see what is this, because it's something that may come to surface in reality in the next few years, because everyone's talking about treaties, everyone's talking about, you know, what they want from the Commonwealth of Australia, for example, if that's the one they choose to treaty with. So I think it was very beneficial to all parties involved.
Yes, I think the culturally safe space was created by the two nations themselves. There was a lot of preparatory work that we did with you about what were your expectations, and we tried to do our best to accommodate as much as we could of those. In terms of the students, we had quite a few Aboriginal students and we also had some non-Aboriginal students and lawyers. So the benefit for the Aboriginal students is clear, that they can see this is really what our communities back home should be endeavouring to do. You know, one of the things that I think Uncle Michael had said is Western education is great, but a lot of our kids go there and become assimilated. So these kinds of programs help to pull them back from that coercive assimilation, because they see how elders behave, they see how elders treat each other with respect, and they see the fidelity and the and you know, that difference to elders and things that we always talk about, but perhaps, I'm not saying you, but sometimes it's not always evident in our communities. So them seeing these things is fantastic, and they take it back hopefully to their own communities. For the non-Indigenous lawyers and students, the experience was amazing. I think one of the judges who I won't name, who was at the moot on the final day, he said if he had seen this process taking place, some of the cases that he decided in the past might have been decided quite differently. So this is a matter of education, not just for some people, but for all of us. I mean, I feel I learned so much from the process. And that was a common refrain. A lot of people said that they learned a lot. I can't remember how many years ago, talking to you about these issues, and when what you were doing seemed quite outside the box, to, you know, if that doesn't sound too crude, of how, you know, you develop your own law, your own systems of governance, and exercise your self-determination. I think the first overhead that I put up was, first they laugh at you, then they join you, and then you defeat them. I mean, that was, I think, what Mahatma Gandhi said. And I think the arrogance of the strong sometimes is their downfall, and the humility and the fidelity of what they would call weak. I don't think you're weak by any stretch of the imagination, but that's how they perceive us. And the Uluru statement talks about the powerlessness of Aboriginal communities, which I didn't see in your communities, because your elders spoke strongly, powerfully, forcefully, politely, and, you know, with a great degree of integrity.
Yes, we would probably say that that powerless may be experienced by Indigenous Australians, as opposed to, obviously, the Yidinji Nation is moving forward, but there's a reality check there too. I mean, it's a difficult road, but, you know, it's one that if we don't do it, who else is going to do it for us? And I think that's where there's a real sense of amongst the, let's say, the legal community here at the ANU, a very big interest in how that shift in or closing that gulf of representation, or whatever you want to call it, or self-governance, for example, how will that be achieved, and what is the model? And you know, the written law is really good, because there are lots of examples on the type of models you can choose, and those international laws and standards are very important, because it's something that you can use like a tool, and hence they are instruments. But I like the fact that this is going to possibly lead to bigger and better things, and that there will be a lot more acceptance around institutions, not only here but abroad, about that, looking at this unique window of seeing it from the Indigenous point of view, which you may not get, or you may get inside the Commonwealth of Australia. It depends on what you're looking at. But, you know, these the ability to create law and the grundnorms that the tribal societies have, now they have these tools that they can pick up and start to use. And we would say for the peace, order, and good governance of their community, their nation, their tribe, their mob, whatever. But also the important part that these things need to take place for true settlement, or security of for all persons in the future. And that's a really big thing that we spoke of on the day of that that moot. And I think some of the students were really excited by that, because they could see that there needs to be this other interaction from this other party. We just can't be talking about X group and whatnot, but not talking to them. And as I often point out, that the Yidinji government is the voice for the Yidinji nation, because it's created by the Yidinji nation. It wasn't one that we had to ask permission for someone else to give it to us or whatnot. So, but I don't want to confuse those issues, but the importance now of legal experts like yourselves and practitioners working together and saying what would be the most appropriate model, how do you want to move forward as a group or a nation?
So the answer to that, because we believe in self-determined communities, is up to your community. As lawyers, we serve your community, not because we are Yidinji, but because we are brothers in a different kind of way. One of the most fascinating things I heard that came out of your negotiation between Yidinji and Birigaba was this. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People talk about minimum standards. And, you know, the settler colonial countries really pushed our people down in terms of what they could expect. But you didn't buy into that. You didn't buy into that. What you said was, you're going to set your own standards, which are moral, which are truthful, which are transparent, and going to set those as a minimum standard. Now, what this does for a whole group of Indigenous people around the world is to lift the whole ship. The ship rises with the tide, and what you're doing is lifting the tide. You're just pushing everybody up. This is not something that I've ever seen among Indigenous communities, because I think largely they feel beaten down. I didn't sense that either community of yours, but there was a kind of this is who we are. Yes, we have to, you know, interact with other people, but there are certain standards that we will not lower, because we want to be true to ourselves. So this is an absolutely fascinating thing, because it really allows us as Indigenous people on this continent to raise the standards, something that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. And that was wonderful. We still have to do it. But if you know where you're going, you're likely to get there. If you don't know where you're going, I mean, you know, then you're going to sort of walk hither and thither. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, what Bumi said, you know, was really touching at the end there when we were debriefing, that we're not criminals. Like that's what it is. Like we're not criminals on our own territory, but we can see that the need to use the written law now to express to the world and describe to the world and codify what our values are. Like you said, you know, and that's an important thing. Whereas possibly in years past, those standards or whether we agreed with them or not, they impacted on our lives. So it's really good that that these matters were put on the table for consideration, and I think that really gentle approach that you earlier mentioned by both nations there, it did have a huge impact on the students, for example. And when we were having dinner, they were talking about, you know, what would a better world be like? I mean, if the written law is there to create a better world, and how can that fundamentally be, let's say, become more real? Because, you know, there's injustices all over the place, and sometimes the written law doesn't provide a sense of true justice or truth even, you know. These are versions of truth, and people will want some sort of ultimate truth, I guess. So I think that was an interesting exercise as well. What was some of the feedback from the students about being part of this exercise?
I think they found it absolutely fascinating. They said nothing they've learned at law school even remotely compares to this, which is true. You know, we only talk about one law, We don't really talk about plurality. We don't talk about Indigenous issues other than what the High Court has said about it. This is quite traumatic for our students. You know, it's not something that non-Indigenous people understand. But when they come to a space which is truly Indigenous and we are attempting to use Indigenous norms without ignoring other people's norms. Nobody ever said, well, to hell with the rest of the world, we're not going to deal with them. Nobody ever said that. They said, well, we'll deal with them. And I think one of the examples that came out was what good faith might mean. You know, good faith is a beautiful word, but it's not always exercised in its spirit. I think the delegates on both sides wanted to define some of the qualities of good faith, and that is truthfulness, not misleading the other side, you know, acting with transparency. It's a whole lot of words that, you know, you see from time to time in different cases, but not articulated in that one spot, in that one particular kind of way. So I know we didn't do this, but one of the things I hope that would come out is that we create a dictionary of terms for treaty and define these terms in the way, you know, the two communities have defined them. I think that would be, you know, and when we deal with other Indigenous communities to say, this is what we hold good faith to mean. And, you know, we will not stoop to the kinds of behaviours that other nations have stooped to.
Yes, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, and we're broadcasting from the Ngambiri Ngunnawal Territory, and a big thank you to all those who give us their blessings to be here. And if you're listening inside the Commonwealth of Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service, and check your local station about who's broadcasting that. But we'll be back after the break.
Hello, my name is Andrew, and I'm from Arnhem Land. My band called Andrew Guru Band, and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
And that's it for Black Law Tribal Edition today. Ganyara, some final comments on what we've been talking about?
Probably the biggest thing is to is to understand the coexisting word of sovereignty. You can't have one sovereign thing inside another sovereign thing, because sovereignty is about the ultimate power, I suppose, the ultimate authority on a given piece of land. How can you have coexisting sovereignty without a formal agreement, without a treaty in place? You've got to have some form of power sharing arrangement for something like sovereignty, because you just can't have one. Now, if we wanted to apply sovereignty correctly, Australia would be subject to our authority, our sovereignty. We don't want that. We want this Australia, the international actor, Commonwealth of Australia, to control its people. But they've got to work with us. So it's understanding the legal mechanisms that are in place. And if you want to stay inside Australia, look, by all means do so. We're not going to force anyone to go to the other side, to the other sovereignty. It's there if they can get in their mind and they can develop their nation, which they really should. Aboriginal people, the Indigenous people, really should be developing it. Their nations that were there first for the purpose of protecting what come lately, you know, the Commonwealth of Australia, for the interest of Australia, but also for their nation. So how do we settle the past? Australians can't settle the past with Australians. No way, they can't do it. It's got to be between the coexisting sovereignties. How do you secure the future? They can't do it for himself, because while there's one Aboriginal nation, Indigenous nation, or pre-colonial Indigenous nation that's here, they can do a deal with the US or China, for example, two opposing enemies in the trade war of things. Maybe if they do a deal with America, then it's not all of Australia all of a sudden. It's got some part of America here. Or they do a deal with China. They've got some part of China here in all of Australia. It's not a whole unified nation. Just be aware of that, and to start thinking about developing, advancing, or revitalising your old pre-colonial Indigenous laws, bringing them into the modern world like us, where we now have our Wallace, you know, sovereign, you know, Yidinji dollar Wallace, you know, that's the sovereign Yidinji identity. The whole box and dice is contained in modern technology, and I tell you what, we're leading the way in it.
Yeah, that brings it into the show. May God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to the show, and in the almighty name of Yeshua. And we We'll catch you next week, and hopefully Bumi Nyiralem will be back on board. We'll catch you next time. You have a great day.